What was your takeaway? Because when we just talked about the ownership, I mean, you were on the line. You heard all of what Steven just said, and you were watching this afternoon. What were you coming away from after those 40 minutes of Ross Atkins?
That they want to be aggressive this offseason. You know, and I think in the past we've heard the Blue Jays kind of hover around the edges and talk around situations. That was as aggressive, that was as confident that I've heard Ross speak at the end of a season about how aggressive that they want to be this winter. And I think if you're a Blue Jay fan, that's exactly what you want to hear.
Yeah, well, and it makes sense, Arash, because, you know, again, if you want to go back through the entire kind of history of this front office, but, you know, we know they inherited a very good team, you know, and a very old team, but a very good team, a playoff team. They ran it back out once and got back to the postseason. They made the mistake of trying to run it back out one more time. And again, I'm not sure what role ownership had in those decisions about 2017 and trying it again. That didn't work. But they, in, you know, they've drafted well and they have developed well and they bottomed out at 95 losses. But this is kind of the moment, you know, in terms of the script that they laid out from the beginning, this is the moment, right? This, not just this winter, but this winter for sure would be one where it would be appropriate to go out and be really aggressive because, you know, what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for? And I don't want to say that the window is closing because it's not, but the window is certainly closing on having Bichette and Guerrero at the salaries at which they're at,
mm-hmm.
on Teoscar being a manageable salary number. You know, and who knows what the new CBA is going to mean and what it's going to bring and all of those things. But you're not paying Alec Manoah much, and you're not paying Nate Pearson much, and who knows what Pearson's going to be, and you're not paying Jordan Romano much or Tim Mesa much. So if you're going to go make a splash this off season anywhere, this is kind of the time to do it, because at some point, you know, all of those names I just mentioned, and especially Bichette and Guerrero, their time is coming up to get paid. And when they do, the salary structure is completely changed than where it is now.
Yeah. And the truth is, not everybody's going to get paid, yeah. Right? Like, that's the choices will have to be made here at a certain point. And, you know, you're right. Like, Ryu, you know, you start looking at when money comes off the books, right? Ryu comes off the books in another two seasons. You don't have to extend Vladdy and Bo right now. And I don't know that you can, but it's going to be that balancing act. Obviously, Springer doesn't come off the books for a long time. So yeah. You're right, Arash. There is, you know, no one has unlimited payroll, but all teams are built with some combination of guys who are getting paid in their 30s and guys who are on, you know, those really restrictive early contracts where they don't get paid anything near their value. You know, like, you know, in terms of, you know, value for money in all of sports, is there anybody, you know, more where you got more bang for the bucks you had to pay than for what you paid Vladdy Guerrero this year?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's the system. Yeah. The other thing I was encouraged by was what Ross said at the end. He said, you know, if we could bring back this roster, mm-hmm. we would. And I think that's easier said than done, because bringing back the same roster is going to cost them a lot of money. And I don't see how both Semien and Ray return. I foresee very few scenarios if we're mapping out a whole pile of them on how Marcus Semien's a Blue Jay next year. But and you look around this division, I know the Rays just won 100 games and they won back-to-back divisions for the first time, blah, blah, blah. But, like, nobody scares you
No. The
way the Yankees used to, the way the Astros did 4 or 5 years ago, the way even the Dodgers did last year. That the big, bad AL East, it's just bad. It's not as big and bad anymore.
Yeah, and those two guys are going to be the biggest question marks this offseason, Marcus Semien and Robbie Ray, and how aggressive the Blue Jays are in signing a couple of 30-year-olds to longish term deals that are north of...
And I'll disagree with you there. I actually think the bigger question is whether or not they lock up Jose Berríos.
Yeah, me too. I would actually make that, in terms of priorities, Arash, for me that would be number one. Ahead of those two guys.
You're already talking about somebody who has playoff experience. He's only 27. He doesn't turn 28 until next year. You gave up, a first round pick and one of the returns in the Stroman deal, to me, you traded for him not just for half of this year and next. You traded for him with the hopes that he's going to be a franchise cornerstone, that he's going to be the ace or co-ace of your staff with Manoah and maybe Pearson. So I get Robbie Ray was the guy this year. I understand that fully. I understand he should win the AL Cy Young Award, et cetera. But already, Jose Berríos has a better body of work overall and has shown more consistency overall than Robbie Ray has.
Yeah,
because Robbie Ray has had one good season, and that's it.
And they got to look at him. You know, or actually, the other thing is they got to look at him close up, right? They got to work with him. They should know a lot more about him than they knew when they traded for him. Like all the, you know, in terms of the on-field stuff, what we saw, he had a couple of little wobbles very early when he came over. But after that, man, he was rock solid. He looks like he's really durable. As you say, he's 27.
And vice versa, Steve.
Yeah.
Berríos got a chance to be in that environment.
True.
And be around the staff and be around the city. And it wasn't a regular one. He didn't get a full spring training. He didn't really get a chance to see the player development complex. He wasn't, you know, his family didn't come up to Toronto. I think his wife just came up once. So all of that also weighs in the equation, too. But I would put Berríos 1, Ray 2, and Semien 3 in terms of the... I'd actually put Teoscar 3 ahead of Semien. I just have very, very, very little confidence that Marcus Semien returns to Toronto because I think Marcus Semien wants to go back to California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. I am reminded, though, of just how emotional Bo Bichette was in talking about how impactful spending that year with Marcus Semien was. And maybe, you know what, he got what he needed out of Marcus Semien in the 1 year, and that you just say thank you for your service and move off. But I it was not that long ago where I was thinking about prioritizing and which guy I would, and I thought it was Robbie Ray. And if you could, like, all things
right,
being
but
equal,
Ben yeah. he's a free agent.
I'm aware
the Blue Jays
that.
The Blue Jays don't decide this,
right? I tend to think if the Blue Jays offer him the highest amount of money that he would be a Toronto Blue Jays. The problem is you're not dealing with a small market team. You're not bidding against the Oakland A's. It's probably the San Francisco Giants, right?
And they're going to open up the vault.
Yeah.
Brandon Crawford doesn't play every day anymore. Marcus Semien famously 2 weeks ago said, I still see myself as a shortstop. Marcus Semien's from the Bay Area. His wife's from the Bay Area. They have three kids. Both sets of grandparents are in the Bay Area. They didn't sell their house in the Bay Area. And the dude who was in Oakland with Marcus all those years is now running San Francisco's baseball operations.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a lot of money to spend, and they just won 107 games.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? As many runs as this Blue Jays team scored, and as fun as the offense was to watch, what I think separated this team from the other contenders in the American League East outside of the Rays, who just have guys who throw 99, like they lose Tyler Glasnow and it's no big deal, was the rotation. So yeah, prioritizing a 27-year-old in Berríos, a guy who's establishing himself as Alek Manoah. The question, of course, is what Nate Pearson is. And that's the other part of the,
sure,
the Ross Atkins media availability that really stuck out to me, because yeah, he did reference him as starter, but he talked about the spectrum and was kind of wishy-washy, honestly, about, and I understand there's an innings progression
there
thing.
There is, yeah. It's,
right?
It's 2016 Aaron Sanchez.
But also saying we'll put him in whatever position helps us win, right?
Well, I think one of the things they've got to establish, you know, and again, Nate Pearson's injuries have all been kind of, they haven't been wear and tear injuries, right? They've been weird injuries, right?
Yeah.
Like, so... That, which is a good thing, by the way, that we're not talking about his elbow or shoulder. But they don't know what he looks like with a starter's workload, because he's never really had one.
Yeah.
Right? It's something's always happened in the through his minor league career. Like, you got to go back, you know, you're talking about him in high school, essentially. So they don't know, you know, that these guys are all different in terms of durability. So I think they need to decide, and, you know, that's why you pay all those sports medicine people. But they need to decide. Look, they're, it's possible that he's not built for it. And if he's not built for it, he'll be a great bullpen piece. But I don't know that there's any way to do that until you actually have enough runway to stretch him out and then have him start for a month or two or three and see what it looks like and see how effective he is and see if he holds up. So, you know, it's tantalizing because you see the arm, right? You see, and especially the end of this year, you really saw what's there, what we've been told about. But I don't think they can write down anything in pen about him for next year in terms of how they're going to use him, because I think that's all TBD. Now, the other thing I keep coming back to, Arash, and again, this may be, you know, that this may be just kind of dreaming on something, but, you know, the other way to acquire people is by trade. And and I keep looking at Jose Ramirez over in Cleveland and think, you know, that guy's a great fit. He's kind of, he would be a really good fit for this team. And Cleveland's not in a position, they're kind of, I'm not sure where they're at right now, to be honest, but they don't like to spend money, and they're not a contender, an obvious contender in that division next year. You know, you would have to wheel some assets, and they've already spent a bunch of their prospect capital. But, you know, Lourdes Gurriel, there's a reason people talk about him as a trade asset because of that contract he has, and he had a really nice year. There's some other, they got a lot of catchers. I think they're going to make it. I think we're going to see them make a trade, a significant trade.
That would wipe out your minor league system. Even if Cleveland is open to moving him, which has been a question, because it was reported during the season, the Red Sox were calling as well, and they have yet to make him available, or at least accept a trade. A trade has not been acceptable for him, and he's under that incredible contract.
Yes.
But that would the Blue Jays have already started trading away some of their top prospects, and they did in the Barrios.
And who cares if it depletes it?
Yeah. Now's the time to do that too, right? So yeah, I think Gabriel Moreno sounds like he's an awesome player.
Yeah,
but this is when you do that, isn't it? Isn't this why you accumulate prospects to win the World Series, right?
And I've said this before. Outside of Syndergaard, who is the Blue Jays prospect of the last 20 years that you really regret trading away?
Matt Boyd's the only one that's had like any success, really.
Yeah, look, it's probably a good thing they didn't trade Vladdy to Miami for Christian Yelich. Yeah.
That price was ridiculous.
And that might also say something about the caliber of the prospects, you know, as well. Mm-hmm. Like that they, you know, like the Jeff Hoffmans of the world maybe weren't. You know, there may be some draft picks in there that weren't all that great, is what I'm saying.
They were going to trade Jeff Hoffman for a general manager.
Yes. So, you know, but you're right, Arash. But even if they do come back to bite you, that's...
Who cares if you're winning?
It's what you've got to do, right? That's part of the reason you accumulate them. They're not all going to make it. And, you know, that's... Look at the Barrios trade. I don't know what's going to happen with those two guys. We'll see. But can you argue with them making the trade when they did?
No, not at all. So, look, this is, again, the window is here. The window is now. The opportunity. It's so funny. Just watching the game last night and all those significant plays around the Green Monster and all the replays of Phil Nevin sending Aaron Judge. Each time you see the standings in the left field wall at Fenway Park.
No, I know.
And it's 92, 92, and 91. And so if that means that you're trading a couple of prospects, three prospects, and I'm tired of even calling them prospects, minor leaguers away, and that's going to mean a few more wins and playing, and we're not talking, the general manager's not having his season-ending press conference until 2 weeks from now, then that's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and what we called out of the Ross Atkins media availability, but he did mention, was talking about Gabriel Moreno, that he kind of made reference to the idea of him in 2022 is like really accelerating and probably not beneficial to his development. And if he's not impacting your team in 2022, when it's definitely make the playoffs or bust. And if you're making the playoffs, you're thinking about World Series or bust. Maybe gives you an indication of the timeline on the player and what the organization thinks of him and their willingness to put him into a trade for a guy that the percentage chance of him becoming as good as Jose Ramirez is a very low.
Well, look, minor league system ratings are awesome and they feel good when you're lousy. Like, you know, if you're in Baltimore right now, probably you're going to hang on to your minor league system rating, but they don't win you anything. No. I got news for you. They don't win you anything.
No, they don't.
And my other question is, if Jose Ramirez isn't a thing, I don't think that Kevin Biggio is in the plans to be the everyday third baseman. I don't think they have anybody, quite frankly, who's the everyday third baseman.
No.
What does Kyle Seager cost you as a free agent?
Yeah, he was interesting.
Right? Do you sign him for 2 years, $16 million? Is that what Kyle Seager will go for next year? I don't know.
Yeah, the Mariners turned down an option for him this year, which I think was $16 million. So, yeah, it's less than that. He was a big power bat, and he's a pillar of that franchise, but clearly they were ready to move on. No, he was a guy I had circled as well, left-handed bat.
Yep.
Not a big power guy, or not a big on-base guy. Yep.
They need more left-handed bats. It's vital to have adults / professionals around. So much of the Semien, we get caught up in the Semien numbers and, you know, most home runs ever by a second baseman. But Marcus Semien took infield every day. And when Marcus Semien took infield every day, guess who was right there beside him every day? Marcus Semien showed up to the batting cage at the same time every day. Side tosses, six side tosses every day in the cage at the exact same time. Having that around as a model, as an example for a younger clubhouse, they're not kids anymore, but they are younger. Kyle Seager provides that for you too.
Yeah. And you can hold on to Gabriel Moreno, although I like Jose Ramirez better than Kyle Seager, but I like Kyle Seager a lot. I was looking at him as well, Arash. Hey, great season, Arash. Well done on your reporting. It was great to see you traveling late in the season.
I understand you got some more travel
ahead of you, so enjoy that. Thanks, buddy.
You got it. I'm headed to San Fran tomorrow for the divisional series, so I will be on the Marcus Semien Marcus Semien beat while I'm down there. I will keep you both updated.
Yeah, I hope for your sake it's Dodgers San Fran, because that'd be kind of great on every level. And
yeah, it really would.
Cheer for the trip. That's what I always say.
Cheer for the trip and cheer for the rivalry in this game.
Yeah, that too.